Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Nats Town. Welcome to Nats Nightly, sponsored by the District Sports page and FederalBaseball.com. This is Patrick Reddington from Federal Baseball. I've got Dave Nichols from the District Sports page and Doghouse on his way home from the Nats win on the phone here tonight. The Nats win 2-1 on a walk-off double by Bryce Harper, which is quite possibly the saddest walk-off ever because about an hour before they did it, the New York Mets clinched the NL East. About that same time, Dave, Barry Sperluga put a story up on the Washington Post that Matt Williams losing the Nationals clubhouse over the last couple of weeks completely. Nationals, as he says, they knew Matt Williams was going to have to grow into this job. There'd be some learning curve there. You have to, you know, learn on the job, essentially, since he'd only managed in the Arizona Fall League and a short stint in Double-A beforehand when he filled in for a sick club manager. But Sperluga writes tonight that several Nationals believe Williams won't be able to grow even if the club brings him back for 2016. And this isn't just one or two malcontents, he writes. These opinions span positions and experience. And he quotes an unnamed player among several who talked to him off the record who says it's a terrible environment. And the amazing part is that everybody feels that way. You really can't get much worse than what's in this article for Matt Williams. I was kind of on the side that I thought they would understand that he had to grow and was going to make mistakes along the way, but it was part of hiring a manager with no experience. But after reading this article, my thoughts about Matt Williams coming back for next season certainly changed.
Yeah, it's hard to read those comments and think anything but him losing his job at this point. It's tough to get confirmation like that from the national baseball writer for the Washington Post. I mean, this isn't some quote unquote blogger, making this stuff up or even a national baseball writer, getting the ear of one agent that's saying I've heard this stuff from the national clubhouse. I mean, Sperluga quoted at least three or maybe four individual players making these comments in this article. And I don't know how Mike Rizzo as a general manager can see this coming out in public, written by the national baseball writer for the Washington Post at this point, and justify keeping Matt Williams around, even if he thinks that Matt Williams is the right guy for the job. If the players are no longer responding to him and believe that the lines of communications are strained or not open, if they believe that the manager is inflexible and incapable of deviating from his strategies, if they think that he is not the right person to lead this team, then a change has to be made. I mean, you cannot have a clubhouse full of players that are tuning their manager out for whatever reason, and it seems clear at this point that has become the case. And regardless of how anybody feels about Matt Williams strategically, once you have, quote, lost the clubhouse, then you should lose your job. I mean, there's just no two ways about it at this point.
Doghouse, like I said in the opening there, they knew they were going to have to grow with him. This is a team that thinks they're going to contend every year. As Mike Rizzo has said repeatedly, they're an organization that's built to keep on filling in spots when they lose people and be competitive year after year. But 2 years into the Matt Williams era on the bench on this team, they're thinking if they're going to go with a new manager again, you're going to have new position players. Essentially at two or three of the main spots, starting spots in your lineup, definitely one new infielder somehow and one new outfielder, it looks like, even though Michael Taylor played outfield most of this season. But going into the year with a new manager, you have to bring in a veteran if you're going to bring someone else, right? You don't give Randy Knorr or someone who hasn't managed at the major league another shot at this and kind of start over with a brand new manager who hasn't done it before at the major league level.
Well, I think the only person that you would go to who is not a, quote, veteran would be someone like Randy Knorr, who has extensive experience with the organization and has been in that clubhouse and has seen what has worked and what has not worked over the last couple of seasons, particularly what has not worked. Stop bunting! I just had to get that out there. I realized there was none of that tonight, but it was just so awful the last few nights I had to come back to it. But if it's not Knorr, and I don't, really see that being the choice if and when Matty goes, you got to go with a veteran presence. You got to go with someone who knows how to manage during the game knows how to work a bullpen, and not just work it according to the conventional wisdom and roles. We've seen how that's worked out. Go to someone who is willing to play matchups, who is willing to use a relief ace in a relief spot with leverage, not just in an inning with a particular number on it, which I realize is probably not a widespread skill, but I don't even know who this would be, a veteran manager who can command the respect of the players, but who can manage not like some ossified relic of the era when RBI and pitcher wins were the determining, you know, factors of player worth.
Dave, you weren't on the show last night, so I didn't get your thoughts on the fan outrage over the end of what could be the end of Jordan Zimmermann's time in the nation's capital, pulled for a pinch hitter in the fifth. So the fans didn't get their moment with him to say goodbye, have him walk off to an ovation or anything like that. There's a bit of fan outrage, just to put it nicely, on the internet. Is that the last straw for Matt Williams with a lot of the fans? It sure seemed like it, but what did you think of that, and what do you think they have to do going forward here if and when they do replace Matt Williams?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that certainly they addressed that piece, you know, that in this piece as well. It's it continues to harbor the idea that Matt Williams only knows one way to do things, and that that even in Jordan Zimmermann's last start here, he was incapable of deviating from his plan to realize the moment ahead of him. You know, we see in the post-game celebration tonight, you know, he was out there. You know, obviously, you know, they're human beings and want to celebrate a win, but, I mean, it's a completely meaningless win. Williams' post-game comments saying, you know, wouldn't address the question about the disappointing season, saying only that that they have to go out and win again tomorrow night. And, you know, it's just, you know, it leads me to believe that even at this point, now that they've been eliminated, that Williams isn't going to give Trey Turner some playing time, isn't going to give Pedro Severino, you know, start behind the plate, isn't going to start A.J. Cole, is going to stick with the veterans that have stuck him in this position all season long. And, you know, I think that just further reinforces the idea that, you know, while steadfastness and, you know, commitment to a plan is a good idea for a grueling, you know, 8-month process with spring training and the games and everything, that you still have to be flexible enough to realize that within the moment you need to deviate from this laid out plan that you have. And Matt Williams, in 2 years as a manager, has just proven incapable of doing that, that he only knows how to operate on a very rote, very detailed, strictly by the process set of rules. I mean, one of the things that people fell in love with him from the very beginning was having this detailed, written out, every minute in spring training accounted for type of process. And what people originally fell in love with Matt Williams in the beginning is now what is sinking him, this inflexibility, this rigid adhering to structure without any deviation or any thought outside of that plan. It's time for him to go.
Positive news on the day, Doghouse. Strasbunny on the mound. He struck out 14 Phillies and 8 scoreless last week in Citizens Bank Park. Matched his career high from his MLB debut. 37 Ks total in his last three starts. That's 14.91 K per 9 before tonight. A 1.61 ERA, 1.52, 1.83, 2.66 line against in 22 and a third innings over that stretch. Facing the Phillies again in Nats Park today. He was 5-4 on the year before today, a 3.34 ERA, 3.32 FIP, 2.28, 2.82, 3.84 line against. And all these numbers are just shocking to me considering the way his season started. But 12 up and 12 down to start the game on 51 pitches. The first hit comes in the fifth, but a double play. His 6K follow that. 5 scoreless on 59, 6 scoreless, 9 Ks on 72 pitches. 12 Ks and 7 scoreless on 84, but a single, ground out, and a double in the eighth, and all of a sudden it's tied up at 1. Nationals just gave him one run of support, and he finally gives one up, and he leaves the game with no decision on a just fantastic start by him again, but no margin for error, and he finally gives up a run in the end there, but 13 Ks total on the day, 3 hits, 1 run, that 1 run, 1 walk on 101 pitches, just another dominant outing from Strasburg in a long stretch where he's been really good on the mound.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again until they abolish the stat. Pitcher wins are dumb. I was forced to actually yell this at some poor man in the stairwell when I was walking down from the upper deck tonight after the game. And this is a perfect example of why. We're really seeing this. I was going to say we're seeing the Strasburg of old here, but honestly, I'm not sure Strasburg was even this good in the olden time. Sure, he had that fantastic debut, and he had a lot of good games, but this continuous run of double-digit strikeouts, game after game, good heavens, the man's on a tear. Granted, we're doing this in the scrubby days of a scrubby season against scrubby teams, no one who has anything left to play for except personal pride and stat padding. But even so, these are major league ball players here. And to rack up these kind of stats, even here in, the season equivalent of junk time, you know, that's pretty impressive. And I think it gives us something that we can cling to looking to next season, having the last season of Strass, and hoping that, unlike Double N, he will realize that his payday is coming up, and one way to maximize that is come really looking good into your free agent year.
I'm kind of personally hoping they get him locked up for a little bit longer before it comes to that, but it's not the way things have gone with the Nationals in the last 2 years, as we've seen, Dave, but the way he's been going the last couple of months, I'd say. Before today, he was 7-2 in his last 11 starts since coming off his first DL stint of the season. 10 walks, 90 Ks over that stretch, a 1.99 ERA, a 2.06, 3.09, 5.14 line against, and 68 innings pitched. So apparently it really was that ankle injury in spring training that led to some of the other issues that caused him problems at the beginning of the year, because since he's come back from that and had some time to rest and get his mechanics straightened out, he's been really dominant after today, 11 Ks, 99 strikeouts, and let me do the quick math here, 74 innings pitched since that first DL stint. Just really dominant stretch by him, and kind of, like I said, a little better than he's been in the past, honestly, and just the Strasburg everyone's been kind of looking for all season has finally been there after that first DL stint.
Very simply, completely healthy, Steven Strasburg is one of the best pitchers in the game. We have said this since his debut. He has displayed it on several occasions since. Unfortunately, it is the lingering injury issue that has kept Strasburg from elevating to the upper echelon of the Clayton Kershaws and the Zach Greinke's and anybody else you might want to mention at the top level of starting pitcher in the league. Steven Strasburg would be right there if he were able to stay completely healthy for a full season. And like you mentioned, his last 11 starts or whatever, just as good, if not better, than anybody in the game. I too would like to see the Nationals sign Strasburg to a long-term deal. His representation doesn't necessarily prescribe to that and generally takes his clients to free agency. So I don't know that it's going to be avoidable with Strasburg or with Bryce Harper down the road, but we're going to see Strasburg enter his free agency season completely healthy and probably go on a tear and thus pricing himself out of re-signing in D.C. But, for all the money that the Nationals have been seemingly willing to throw around to gather other people's free agents, Jason Wirth, Max Scherzer, you would think that they would want to invest in Steven Strasburg. That remains to be seen down the road.
I think it'll all be made a lot easier by the Nationals signing Zach Greinke this winter. But moving on from there, our friend Chase Hughes at CNN quotes Strasburg saying, "Sometimes this game isn't fair. Every single one of these guys competed all year. It just didn't work out this year." Doghouse, the New York Mets are going to the postseason. Words that we probably never thought we'd be saying at the beginning of this season. I wasn't as sure as all the preseason prognosticators were that the Nationals were going to dominate this and run away with it. I thought there were improvements on several teams. I thought the Miami Marlins would be a lot better for one, but didn't see the New York Mets coming. They clinched the NL East today. They're going to the postseason, and Sandy Alderson's apparently built something in there that's going to compete for at least a couple more weeks. I'm kind of hoping they lose in the NLDS just because of all the trolls I've had to deal with on social media, but Bryce Harper said he hopes they win it all. What do you think about the Mets actually clinching the division?
Well, given the way the Nats have been playing, I was going to say recently, but really all season except for a few hot stretches, it's a wonder that they managed to keep it close for so long. We've certainly talked about all the problems that they've had, injuries, underperformance. At the beginning of the season, you know, when most of the team was reasonably healthy or looked like they would be soon, there's certainly no way that we'd be looking now towards, you know, crossing our fingers that we'll finish above 500. Certainly the Mets have been no great shakes, but they've been able to take advantage of a weak division and certainly a full-on face plant by the Nats here. They made some good moves at the deadline, and they've had some good performance and a bounce back since the All-Star break. So they're going to make it to the postseason. I can't really honestly say that they're any better than any of the other teams there. They're probably going to be certainly the weakest team in the NL, including both the wild card teams. But anything can happen in the playoffs. A lot of short series, you know. We can shake our heads and say the Mets aren't going to get anywhere, and you know who knows, they could win it all and make us all look like fools. You know, so I'm going to shake my head and say the Mets aren't going to get anywhere. But you know, I thought that the Nats were a shoo-in for the playoffs too, and look at how foolish I look now.
Dave, I know we've said on this show and other places on our sites, as soon as the Mets hired Sandy Alderson a few years ago, I said that was a bad thing for the Nationals and the rest of the NL East, because I thought he was actually a smart enough guy that he can go in there and turn things around, and really did, especially at the trade deadline. A big pickup of Cespedes, a couple of the other moves he made really kind of solidified this team and allowed them to run away with it in the end.
Yeah, you know, the Mets have a very good pitching staff, and Sandy Alderson certainly knows a thing or two about that and a thing or two about putting together playoff-quality baseball teams. They're going to have to do some work offensively to defend their NL East division title. It'll be interesting to see if they're willing to re-sign Cespedes or do other work in finding some offense. But the Mets are no slackers. I mean, they identified a problem at the trading deadline. They went out and addressed it. And grabbed the bull by the horns and you know, essentially walked away with it. I mean, that 4-13 first half of August absolutely doomed the Nationals, and that was, you know, that was the time when they got three of their players back from injury, but hadn't played all summer, so they were going through their spring training at that point and just, you know, couldn't compete, unfortunately, and now we're left with all the ramifications of that. The question about the manager, the question about the free agents that they'll be leaving, the question about roster turnover. We've got, all off season to be talking about this. And I certainly think I can speak for the three of us that we wish that it was going to be November before we had to talk about it instead of here at the end of September.
Nationals walk off today, 2-1 final in Nationals Park, 79-75 on the year. The saddest walk off ever. Congratulations, Mets. Worst of luck in the NLDS. Nat Knightley, sponsored by the District Sports page and FederalBaseball.com. Talk to both of you guys soon.
Go Nats.
I'm Grinky.